Hello, welcome to Spotlight, shining out artistic joy as seasons turn.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, remember me to all at home, an evening of plays and music, to remember those who gave their lives for ours. You Can Dance, Art and Movement at KA. The premiere of a work by a local composer for choir and string quartet. And Ellipse is finally unveiled. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you may be involved in, planning, hoping to create or would really like to, altogether, put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, blah, 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 blah. You know the list. Just get in touch. Howard Kane with an E at manxradio.com. Spotlight at manxradio.com. Then we can feature you as well with whatever artistic joy you may be doing. Tis a packed show, less from me, more from the artists. We spoke to first-time playwright Jenny Derbyshire earlier this year when she not only won the One Act Play Festival here on the island with her play Shelter, but went on to win the prestigious Derek Jacobi Playwriting Competition. Now she's teamed up with another award-winning playwright and Spotlight regular, Sharon Walker, for a special evening to raise funds for the Royal British Legion. Remember me to all at home. Drama and music. They called by to tell me more.
It's something that's been in the pipeline for about 18 months. I started writing Shelter about 18 months ago with this concert in mind, and I hoped to gain some feedback by putting it into the One Act Play Fest, well, the Easter Festival of Plays, I should say, and it won the One Act Festival, and I was over the moon with that, and then it won the Derek Jacobi Award. I was absolutely stunned by how well it did. And a few people had said to me, you know, we'd really like to see Shelter. And I thought, okay, that's great. And then I thought, well, I need something with it. I can't have a 40-minute one-act play on its own. And I thought, I need another one-act play, a war-themed one-act play. And I thought, hang on, I've seen a brilliant war-themed one-act play in 2018. And that was Sharon's play, The Perfect Gentleman. So she seemed like the perfect person to ask, and she agreed. So we were absolutely delighted. And then I thought, well, maybe to lighten the mood a little, we could have some wartime music. So I contacted my singing teacher, Mandy Griffin, and she got the Isle of Man Arts Council Community Choir together, and they're performing some wartime songs sort of interwoven in between the two one act. So it's all come together really well, and I think we're all looking forward to performing and to raise money for the Royal British Legion, which is the main factor.
And it's a perfect marriage of the two, Sharon, because The Perfect Gentleman is set in World War One, and of course Shelter is World War Two. So it's just a perfect hand in glove, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I know Jenny says it's sort of a happy accident, but I don't think we could have planned it any better, really. You know, we performed Perfect Gentleman, as Jenny says, back in 2018, and had the opportunity to do it in a couple of other spaces as a result of doing it in the One Act Play Festival in 2018. So having the opportunity to tell the real life story of one of my husband's family members is really exciting. Just to share his experiences and what he went through, I think, is tremendous. And we're really, really grateful to Jenny for giving us the opportunity in doing so.
Just give us a little précis then for those who might not know it. As you say, it is based very much on real life, on these letters which you discovered, with obviously some dramatic license to sort of make sense of it all and give it some colour. But in essence, the basis of all of The Perfect Gentleman is someone's life story or their experiences in the trenches fighting out in World War One.
Absolutely. So it's the story of Cyril Walker, who was my husband's great-grandfather, who happened to just be down in London one day on business, was walking along the Strand in 1914 and saw a sign for joining up. So he joined up like lots of young men did, with the idea that they would go off and fight the Hun and they would be home at Christmas and it would all be over. But actually the reality of what happened was that he went out to the front line in 1915 and spent pretty much the whole of the First World War out there. I was very lucky to come across Cyril's letters the year before in 2017. John sort of showed me them, and we actually have the original letters, which is also tremendous. And I read through them and I said, you know what, there's a story in this, there's a play in this, and we should absolutely tell that story. And that's really how the play came about.
And Jenny, for Shelter, is this obviously very much based on reality, but are the characters in Shelter purely theatrical or from your own imagination?
They are fictional characters, but a lot of the things that are going on around them are based on fact. And I did a lot of research, and I researched an awful lot of personal accounts of things that happened to people in that time. So whilst the characters aren't real, the sort of storylines that are interwoven into their lives are very real, if that makes sense. I wanted it to be as plausible a plot line as possible, so everything that happens in it could have happened.
And what was the catalyst for you? Because Sharon said, obviously, finding these letters and reading through them, thinking, goodness me, what a story. There's clearly a story to be told there and could be turned into a play. What was it for you which sort of drove you to want to actually express this story in the form that you did?
My great-grandfather fought in the First World War, and he came home. And my grandfather, Will Derbyshire, and his brother, Ron Derbyshire, were sadly killed in the Second World War. And it occurred to me, I wondered how somebody could understand or sort of accept coming back from what was called the Great War, the War to End All Wars, and to come home and then for their children to be sent into another war. And that's the foundation, really, of Shelter. The whole concept of how did this happen, really. So it's very sad and very emotive piece, but thought-provoking. And that's the aim of it, really, is to get people thinking and talking and remembering.
So the evening itself, as you say, Remember Me to All at Home, under the Goodbye Piccadilly Productions banner, will appeal to anyone. Obviously, it has this war theme, looking at both wars and the tragedies and, well, just the horror of war, I guess, in so many ways, whether it's at home or whether it's actually fighting in the trenches. What form will the evening itself take then? Is it play, did you say, then the singing and then play, or how's it going to work?
We're going to have the choir perform some First World War songs, and then that will lead into The Perfect Gentleman. Then there'll be an interval where you can get refreshments from the seating area of Balcomine, and the Royal British Legion will be doing the refreshments. And then afterwards, we'll have the choir singing the Second World War sort of themed songs going into Shelter. And then at the end, we're hoping that people will join in with a rendition of We'll Meet Again.
Quite so, right, yeah. I'll join in.
That's the hope.
And what about for you, Sharon, then coming back? Because obviously you did this some time ago, and was it sort of great to revisit it, as it were? Did you have any different feelings about it when you came back to it?
I don't think so. I was just, as I said before, really, really delighted to be able to do it again. I was very lucky that both John and Rachel were available to perform again, and obviously you have kindly stepped into one of the roles as well, so it has just been a case of sort of dusting everything off and sort of doing it as we did before. It's been quite refreshing for me to do something nice and small and then just worry about three people in a cast and what have you. And as I say, I'm just really excited. I feel that enough time has passed between 2018 and now, that actually telling Cyril's story again feels actually quite fresh. We were very fortunate at the time, because we performed it across, that actually members of the Walker family were able to see it last time as well. And, having people who remember the characters in the play in real life was really tremendous to be able to sort of link that. But it's just been a really lovely thing for us to do again.
Sounds like it should be a great evening for young and old, and all money going to a great cause of the British Legion there. Right, the nitty-gritty then, Jenny, dates, times, places, how do people get hold of the tickets?
The performances will be on the 7th and 8th of November at 7:30, Balcomine Studio Theatre. If you'd like to get tickets, you need to phone the Villa Gaiety box office. I know that's a bit strange because it's Balcomine, but it is the Villa Gaiety box office. And that phone number is 600 555, or you can call the Welcome Centre on 686 801. Or if you understand Facebook and you know how it works, if you go onto the search bar and you type in Remember Me to All at Home, a remembrance concert, it should come up, and there's a link there where you can get the tickets.
What a wonderful idea of Jenny's, and it should be a very special night.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
There's never any shortage of artistic talent on the Isle of Man, and so much more young talent or even nascent talent coming through drama groups and choirs and wonderful youth arts hubs like Kensington Arts KA, where I was only yesterday to hear about the latest dance offering there. We never feature enough dance on Spotlight. From Dance Supremo there, James Doyle. But firstly, Creative Development Coordinator Emma Goodson was keen to tell me more about the latest Art Tank outings.
Yeah, so we've got some October half-term workshops happening this week. So by the time this episode goes out, we will have had our first Junior Art Tank workshop earlier today. So I'm sure that will have gone amazingly.
Absolutely.
The kids are always really excited by the stuff that we do, especially in the school holidays, and the tickets are selling really well. We're sold out on our Friday one, unfortunately, so if you haven't got a ticket, you've missed out. Yeah, better luck next time. But we've got a Art Tank workshop on Saturday, so there's still time to get tickets for that. Our Art Tank one is slightly older age group. It's 9+, so kind of the target audience is like 9 to 13 years old. And there's always lots of fun stuff going on in our workshops, and it's 4 hours. So, yeah, lots of time to get really stuck in and get the creative juices flowing and try out different art activities. Art Tank is all about kind of giving it a go and expressing yourself and, yeah, learning new stuff.
Is it messy?
Oh, yeah, of course. Always messy.
Your old clothes in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't be Art Tank if it wasn't messy. We love to see it.
And no previous artistic experience needed for either of these workshops?
No. I mean, art can kind of, you know, create a space where you can be creative and express yourself. So you don't need to be a brilliant painter or drawer or whatever it is to be get involved. And, you know, our facilitators really encourage you to kind of take the lead in what you're doing. So, yeah, it's for everyone.
So the Friday one's sold out. Saturday, still a few spaces if you get in there. And as you say, I suppose it's a great opportunity if someone's always quite fancied having a go with various types of art and never really known quite how to start. It's maybe a good way of tasting the water and, you know, getting stuck in there with all the materials supplied and some expert experience as well.
Yeah, exactly. And because it's Halloween and Hoptune, it's a really fun theme that the kids get to kind of get stuck in with. This particular workshop on Saturday is titled The Veil Between Worlds.
I'm liking it already.
Yes. And so we'll see what our wonderful facilitators have specifically planned for that. But again, it's kind of always up for a bit of interpretation and leading by participation as well. So the kids kind of get their own say on what that actually means.
So if anyone's interested in coming along to the Saturday Art Tank, how do they do that, and what sort of cost are we looking at?
Yeah, so it's Saturday 1 till 4:30 and the workshop is only £6.50 each. So hopefully that's really affordable for most people. And you book online on via our website, which is kensingtonarts.im.
Lovely. And just a reminder again, if you do it and you come along, don't put your best shirt on.
Yeah, yeah. You can also wear a costume if you feel like it. Yeah.
All right. Oh.
Excellent.
I'm liking the costume. I'm liking the costume idea. Right. We'll just turn to our left, and James, the dance specialist, is here on the left. So you can dance at a series of what, 6 workshops coming up, James?
Yeah, it's a performance project that we're doing. So we're going to work over 6 weeks, and together as a group, we're going to create, rehearse, and perform a small piece that they're going to choreograph.
Okay, again, do you get a real mix of kids coming along to this, and is there sort of experienced dancers and those who've never moved before?
We do, and what's really good about this project particularly is great for those that have a bit of experience, because what they can do is they can bring that learned experience with them and develop and work more deep on it. But it's also great for those that have never experienced any dance before, because we're working from the same starting point. So we're working from using our bodies as a creative tool. So it's how you move, how you dance, So it's also great if you think you're not kind of coordinated and like that. It's absolutely perfect because we're looking at pure movement together. So it's perfect for everybody because we start the same point together.
All right. So there's no challenge for you as a facilitator or as the dance instructor if you've got, like I said, someone who's, yeah, I've done some dance before. They have some experience in movement with other kids coming along who are like, whoa, no, what do I do? How do I move? We can get them all in the same room and still come up with the same piece of work.
Absolutely. What's really fantastic is about kids that have never moved before, because they're sort of working in a creative kind of contemporary format. They don't come with any preconceived ideas or experience. So when they're looking at movement, they're not going, oh, is this good? Does this look good? They're not working from an aesthetic point of view. They're working internally out. So quite often you can find that young people that have no experience actually really excel because they're not bringing those preconceived ideas. They're not bringing their favorite moves, so to speak, that kids with more experience have. They're working inwards out, and that's what movement and choreography is all about, really.
And do you find that the kids who come along, do they normally like experimenting with things like drama as well, or do some, again, music, drama, dance, they also are hand in glove in many ways and coming from a similar background. But do you find some kids come along who've not done any, or other kids who've done drama but want to maybe broaden their palette by experimenting more with movement?
It's all of the above, plus more. What's really great is we get kids from different backgrounds, come from different reasons. So some come through movement, some come through dance, some come through theatre, some come through gymnasts, some who have never even thought about it before, never done anything before, because you build a lot from it. It's not just about having about moving and dancing. It's also about your creativity, confidence, getting fit, engaging with other children, working in a team, problem solving. So they get so much from it. So we get a big variety of kids, which is what's so fantastic about it. But we're all coming together to work together as a team to produce a piece of work to then perform.
So it is a sort of continuous, as it were, narrative over the 6 weeks. You're working towards this one finished piece at the end of the workshops over the 6 week period.
Yeah, dance is very labour intensive. So to create something from new, we from a starting point of nothing, it takes a very long time. We have to build the sequences. We have to build how it fits together on the stage. We have to work out how it fits with the music. We have to understand what we're doing, and then we have to rehearse that. So it's really labour intensive. So 6 weeks is actually quite a short time, but it's just a bit of a taster session to give kids this opportunity to have a go and see whether they like it. And hopefully we'll do another project again in the future.
And how is this notated from you as the facilitator or the instructor, the dance specialist? You're going from week to week. It's not like you've got a score in music or you've got a script or a pile of scripts that you can hand out to the kids. How do you sort of say, right, this is what we did last week up to here, so many moves, and then we're going to build to there? Do you sort of, is there a way of notating it down so all the movements are recorded?
It's called a brain.
So it's just you just keep it in your head, that is it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with dance is repetition is the key. So we have a lot of repetition going over and over again. So repetition gets into our bodies, what we call muscle memory.
Yeah.
So by constantly repeating the movements over and over again, it gets into our muscles to the point that it becomes instinctive. So once we've rehearsed a piece, you don't even think about it. But sometimes we do use video. It's great nowadays that we have video as a resource. Back in the day, we didn't. So we relied on memory or lab and notation. But things like that are just so complicated to learn.
And one thing when we're talking about dance, obviously, I don't know a great deal, but there are lots of different types, whether you're talking, ballet or swing or dance or tap or whatever. But if it's sort of contemporary work, what do we actually mean? And I assume this is what the workshops are about. It is contemporary movement.
Yes. What is contemporary? The million-dollar question that no one can answer in a sentence. So the thing about contemporary dance is that it is such a broad genre, and it has been going for a long time. So we have one extreme to the other. So it's really hard to sort of define in a sentence or even a few sentences, because it's also been fused with things, people mix it with other styles, and also it's always being pushed forwards as an art form. Art should always move. So it's really hard to pin it down in a sentence, but what we're looking at particularly is the pure movement. So it's how does our body naturally move? How can we take that into actual sort of sequences? So it's a more natural sort of organic kind of way of moving. But you can fuse it with all sorts. You can, Wayne McGregor fuses it with ballet. Akram Khan fuses it with katak dancing. So it's a huge, huge genre, which is why it's very, very exciting. There's something for everybody. But it's hard to describe in a sentence or even two.
How do people get involved? If they want to get involved, how do they enrol?
So, again, it's on our website, kensingtonarts.im. The tickets are available there. it's only £18 for all six sessions. But also, if you want to pay in person, you can come down to Kensington Arts and speak to me. We've got a card machine now.
Oh.
I know. Arrived in the 21st century, finally.
It's a bit tech.
So, yeah, that's always an option. You can email us, give us a call, and we can arrange that, or you can pay in cash as well. So, yeah.
I always say it, but it is a little artistic gem in the middle of town that so many people can walk past without even knowing the plethora of courses and workshops, dance and drama taking place behind its understated frontage. Great stuff. Speaking of great stuff, I've known all-round musical wonder kid David Cowell for more years than I care to remember. Someone who always seems to be able to make music out of nothing and steeped in music and singing his whole life, both professionally and with numerous choirs and bands and projects. So perhaps I should have been less surprised than I was when he called me for a chat a while back to say he had a project in mind which he'd always had a hankering for, a work for choir and string quartet.
Well, it's sort of been in genesis for a long, long time. I used to write music for my school choir as a school teacher, and that was years ago now, and enjoyed doing that. And then since retiring about 5 years ago, I've sort of wanted to write some other stuff, but it's just finding the opportunity, really, or finding a way of writing stuff that can get performed. And I've done a lot of choral singing on the Isle of Man and elsewhere, and just thought, wouldn't it be nice to get together a choir and do something like this? So that's sort of how it came about. There was no flash of inspiration, thinking, oh, this is the thing, this is what I'm going to do. But it just came along.
Just came along. Yeah. And an unusual setup, maybe, the string quartet with choir.
Yes, I like string quartets. I've written some music for string quartet, and I've done quite a lot with strings over the years. And I just think it's interesting. It's unusual. You don't get a lot of music for strings in choirs. So I think it's just an interesting thing that you get a different feel than doing music with a piano or an organ. Strings just have a different feel to them. They can do things that pianos can't. And I just thought, essentially, I thought, well, I wonder if I can give it a try. Let's see what happens. And let's see what comes out. And I think that's often the way with composing. You give something a go, and if it doesn't work, then chuck it in the bin. And if it works, then that's good.
And what about the actual sort of theme of it? Because it's called Our Season's Turn. So obviously we are at the turn of the year, autumn going into winter. Is that something, again, which came once you started the music side of it? Was it from the words? Was it something you had started when you thought, yeah, this is a good theme?
Yeah, that's a good question. It came about, really, when the words came about, because having decided that I wanted to write something, I needed some words. I don't write words, I just write music. So I got together with my friend Howard Kane. You might have heard of him.
He's good.
Yeah, he's very good. And I said, I sort of had this idea that I might write something, or we might be able to write something together. To start with, it was to do with Christmas and maybe Christmas going into winter, you know, a general winter theme, some of which was Christmas. But actually, as it turned out, I mean, these things evolve, don't they? As it turned out, the aforementioned Howard Kane came up with some brilliant lyrics that were actually autumn focused rather than winter, and so we've got in I think there's 8 songs altogether. They sort of start with autumn and then find their way towards winter and a couple of Christmas things at the end. So that's where the title came from, really. I mean, the title is taken from some of the words, but it's about seasons. It's about autumn. There's a Halloween piece, isn't there? There's one or two about the transition from autumn to winter, a couple of winter themed things, and a couple of directly Christmas things. And that's how it turned out. It evolved. It wasn't the original intention on my part, or I think on yours, that it would turn out the way it did. It just, that's the way it came.
True, it just seemed to be a natural evolution in these things.
I think it was.
And from the actual writing of the music, how does that work for you then? Is it something, because again, you sometimes hear people, or you hear stories of composers and people who write music, you know, sometimes going to bed, waking up in the morning and thinking, I've almost got a fully formed piece in my head.
Yes.
And then you have other people who are almost rather like writers or poets, where you sit down with a blank sheet or maybe a blank iPad and start.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I do all of my writing I do on a computer. It's a software called Sibelius, which is a fairly industry standard stuff. It's like word processing for music. So I put all of the stuff on the computer. That's how I do it. But in terms of sort of where do the ideas come from? It's hard to describe, really. I think I start with an idea of what I want it to sound like, what sort of feel I want, what sort of thematic stuff. And it just goes from there. Again, it's a sort of evolutionary thing, really. I have found, and I think this is interesting, I have found that the longer I take to write a particular thing, the worse it gets. Or to put it another way, the stuff that I write quickly, the stuff that I've cracked through in a couple of days and I've got from beginning to end, and that's essentially it, those are the best things. I don't know why that is. I think there's something about the psychology in there. I don't know why that is. But I tend to write the best stuff that I write fairly quickly. I've got an idea of how I want it to be, and there we go.
I'm always happy to be surrounded by friends who are far more talented than I am, and I'm blessed to have plenty of them. The premiere of the work is at Lochprom Church, Saturday the 8th of November. It's completely free, would you believe? Open to all. Not often you get a premiere of a new work for nothing, so make the most of it and go along. We'll hear a bit more from David about the writing, the music and the performers themselves next week. Finally, couldn't go without marking the long-awaited unveiling of the last work from Manxbourne sculptor Brian Neal. Mr. Neal, a founding member of the Isle of Man Arts Council and whose works include the Three Legs of Man outside the Rollinsway Airport, of course, died last month at the age of 95, before his artwork Ellipse, which he worked on in the final years of his life, could be unveiled. But it has now been unveiled in the Tynwald National Park and Arboretum last Saturday, the 25th of October. Mr. Neal's daughter Kate was there and told Max Radio's Lewis Foster her dad would have been so pleased that his final work has finally been unveiled in the home of his birth.
Absolutely amazing. It's just astonishing to see it here. And I mean, we've been standing here in the pouring rain and now the sun has come out and the island is lit up in front of us. And I think that sort of sums up what the feeling is. It's sort of like an opening up of sunshine and relief and joy, and just incredible to see it now in place.
And what do you think your dad would have thought about today and the position and everyone enjoying it here today?
I know that he would be absolutely thrilled. I was lucky enough to visit the workshop with him. So he did get to see the finished sculpture, and he could imagine it in the Manx landscape. He knew exactly where it was going to go, and he knew the view across the island down to Corrin's Tower over to Peel. So he could picture it, even though he's not able to be with us today.
And plenty of people enjoying that view here. And you mentioned that your dad liked a storm, so the weather today, quite apt.
Absolutely. He loved the changes on the island and the way that different parts would be lit up as the sun came through the clouds, and it would highlight different aspects of the island. And that's what the Family Guide is all about. Yeah. It's about the visible and the invisible, all the different aspects of the island. So, and he'd be thrilled by the number of people and friends and family that have come to see this today.
And you said some words about looking to future generations, hopefully inspired by this.
Yeah, my father was a great sculptor, but he was also a great teacher. And many of the people here today are now leading artists who were taught by him. So he had a great passion about inspiring future generations and making art and creativity accessible and fun. It so often gets put behind walls of snobbery or financial ticket barriers, and this sculpture has none of these. This is inviting you to complete the piece of sculpture with your imagination.
And what a joy it is. It does what all great art does, makes you think, which surely is a good thing, isn't it, people, regardless of your own taste. That's about it for now. We'll be back next week when we'll be speaking to local author Joanne Clegg as the last book of her two trilogies hits the shelves. What next? Stay tuned. See you then. Whatever you're up to, be creative about it. Hey, Mo.